Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back, and season 41 is over, but that just means it's time to start getting some of these post-game interviews going. And today, a week after the episode is over, I hadn't even watched, the finale hadn't even started at this point. We're already doing a post-game recap, a tell-all, and we are talking to Xander Hastings, third-place finisher from Survivor 41, who's here to break down just about everything that happened in this season and maybe some things that were happening on social media. I don't know. Maybe. But Xander, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm sorry that I'm coming from a not very well-lit stage. I'm in my car. I wanted to focus, you know, some more on the things that make me happy, and traveling is one of those. I'm a huge road tripper, so I drove down to the Keys a couple days ago spontaneously, and that's where I am. I'm currently just living out of my car.
He was banking on winning the $1 million, and when he didn't, this was the backup plan. This is it. We're in the car.
Maybe.
The theme of sleeping outside, for sure.
Yeah, I love sleeping outside. I'm a big fan of, like, Spartan living. I don't think that, you know, your body deserves any kind of reward until you've earned it. So I was so ready for all the hardship on the island. You saw a little glimpse of it at the finale when I'm like, you know, I don't need food. I don't need anything. Like, I'll live off my adrenaline. That's how I am all the time. I just love, you know, being out in the elements and pushing myself and challenging myself.
Yeah, tell us about, I'm working backwards on a timeline here, but you mentioned it. Tell us about those final few nights where it's like crazy downpouring, you're sleeping on the sand, it's already, you know, you're so close yet so far. Tell us a little bit about that, because you were pumped and nobody else seemed to be.
Yeah, I had so much energy. I loved what Jeff was saying, you know, we're moving to a new beach, and I was very familiar with the beach too. I noticed that it's the other side of Yasa. So I was very happy to, like, see the other side of the island. And then I was also so excited to know that there were probably going to be some advantages there. That first night, once we grabbed the torches, you know, we went up to shelter and there's nothing there, just the flint and the machete. And some people were talking about getting sticks. I went off and I started looking for advantages instantly. Even in the dark, I was like, you know, there's got to be something here. Turns out there wasn't. It was so hard to when to know if they were starting to tone down the advantages, because you saw, like, after the merge, there really weren't that many advantages. At least, you know, now in retrospect, there were some, because I didn't get the one on the bench and I didn't know that there was an idol that was hidden late in the post-merge. But yeah, it was hard to know if it was something where they wanted to do this interesting, like, you front load the advantages in the beginning of the season and you have to accumulate them in pre-merge, kind of like, I don't know, just like amassing your soldiers, like getting your weapons ready, and it puts a huge target on your back, and then you've just got to make them last throughout the rest of the game. That's what I thought the season's theme was, so I was expecting not many advantages, but once you put us on a new beach, it's like fresh start. We're going to be struggling. And, you know, that's something that I do love, being able to, like, challenge myself in the actual survival element type thing. I was really ready for just, like, last stretch, you know, end of the track race, give it all you can, kick. And I was so happy to be out in the rain. Honestly, that confessional of me doing, like, the rock star, like, hello, Fiji. I was woken up. I was so delusional. If you notice really closely, like, my eyes are never open in that confessional, because I'm still half asleep. And it was like, I was crouched underneath this, like, palmetto plant, super spiky. And everybody else was kind of like trying to come in with me, because I was, like, clearly dry. But I was just leaning into the spikes and taking it. And I was like, you know what? I've worked this hard and I've gotten this far. And I never really thought I would get that far. So just to have gotten that far was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's so many things off of that I want to ask, but I'll try to start small and work and build our way out here. But you talked about the lack advantage in the second half. And I actually think that was a nice breath of fresh air, especially early on. It seemed like, okay, Brad has this, you have this. Now you don't have a vote. Brad doesn't have a vote. It started getting really hard to keep track of who had votes, who didn't have votes, who had idols, who didn't have idols. But then it really was once it was all set, it was set. And I don't know what was under that bench. I don't know if that advantage actually came into the game at any point. I don't know if anybody really knows, but it was kind of nice that once the merge hit, there were just a few things that came up, and it wasn't just, hey, an idol was played and now we're going to go find another idol. Even what is found at the end of the game by Erica, it's not an idol. And it was kind of nice to not have it just be idol getting down the stretch. And you couldn't pull a Ben bomb this season. You couldn't make that happen.
Yeah. I think it answers a lot of the qualms of the fans. So I was surprised that so many people were disappointed with the new changes because, you know, a lot of the pre-merges are often a little stale. It's a little boring, sometimes predictable. And the merge, post-merge, that's when things start to heat up. So I thought that this was an interesting way to make the pre-merge really exciting, to make it, you know, very hard to find advantages. Usually it's like you start looking and the only consequence is that, low battery. The only consequence is that, you know, you're looking. So people might, you know, think, oh, maybe he or she found an idol and that puts a target on your back. But in this case, it puts a lot more than just a target on your back. You're going to have to deal with the fact that, you know, there are all these advantages and it's a little bit chaotic. And then also the downfall of the idol where you don't get to have your vote. So it's a lot of high risk, high reward, especially early on. And then it's so cool that you would have to work hard in the beginning, because I feel like it's so easy to be a floater in this game, and this season they wanted no floaters. At most, at every tribal council, there were only six people being voted for, except for one or two times. So there were really, really small people being eligible to be voted out. It was always low numbers, always high stakes, like there's nowhere to hide. And that's something that I think Survivor's trying to shy away from, is the people who just blend in the beginning. Now you can't blend in, because if you don't go out and find those advantages and put that huge target on your back, you're getting left behind. You're missing out. You're not going to be able to find those later on in the game. It's going to be too late by then.
Yeah, and what I have a question, but for people listening, maybe not live, Xander's on like a 5 second delay, so he's not ignoring us after we ask questions for a quick sec. But yeah, after your idol gets activated, once you hit that merge beach, did you feel nervous because everybody knew you had an idol, or did you feel this kind of sense of camaraderie with Nasir and Shan because they were in the same boat and maybe there's no mystery fear anymore?
Nasir and I definitely, we talked a lot about the idols. You saw a brief clip of like me saying, hey, listen, they're going to be coming for us. And he's like, I've got your back, bro. We had actually a lot of fun. Like, I knew everybody. I always went in with the impression that everybody was going to know about it because of the ridiculous phrase. I wouldn't have guessed that it was Evie would be the reason why everybody knew about it, but I figured everybody would know about it. So I just treated it as such, and I treated it like I was going to be the first one to go when I was eligible to be voted out. And that's what most people say anyway. They look at me and they're like, oh, you're easily like the first merge boot, or, you know, right before the merge. So I was ready for that to be like the most important time for my game. And it actually could be a huge advantage for me, because if I can overpromise and tell people like, hey, you know, I'm Kris Kringle, I've got my bag full of gifts, I'm ready to give it out, there for us, it's we, our, us, not me, not I. And I thought it was interesting that nobody really in Survivor history has ever thought of advantages as a collective thing. I mean, sure, they can use it for the collective group, but to almost just sell them as like, hey, we're doing an advantage hedge fund, like my advantage is your advantage, we're all sharing the wealth here. I thought it really helped me out. And that was like my strategy going to the merge, was like, I'm going to use these to convince people that my advantage is their advantage, which, you know, given the fact that I was playing up the young surfer boy type dopiness, that was certainly easy for people to believe that, like, oh yeah, he's just a team player, he's going to do whatever for us. And then the other way that I was going to use it is I was going to bluff the shit out of it. Because if people know that I know that they know that I have an idol, then they expect me to play it, which is why Danny, in like every episode, he's always saying, you know, oh, he'll play it. He'll play it. It's because I know that they know about mm-hmm. my idol. So why wouldn't I play it? But the mm-hmm. fact that I know that I'm thinking one level above them means if I can just say, oh, yeah, you know, if I show up to camp calm and collected and it's like I'm not even stressed, then they just truly believe that, like, I'm going to play my idol, because why would I be so calm? Why would I be so comfortable? And I always was. So they just assumed that, oh, he's going to play it.
Well, and especially we've seen in recent seasons, I always think about Aubrey and we saw with Kelly Kim, we see so many players get voted out with idols in their pockets, and it started to lead to people being a little bit more nervous about it and wanting to kind of to play them and make sure they're not the one who goes home with an idol, because all of a sudden Aubrey's whole entire legacy is tarnished because she goes home with an idol. It's so unfair. She's playing against newbies. She didn't get owned by newbies. The newbies knew her game. She doesn't know their game. That's a huge advantage, huge disadvantage. But there is such a negativity towards people who get voted out with an idol still in their pocket. And we actually saw on this season, it was like they just assumed they were going to flush it, but they didn't really seem like they were convincing you at all that, okay, tonight's your time. Because if they're doing that, they're also stating to you, okay, we're going to try to flush Xander's idol. We're going to waste that. But that means somebody else of us is going home tonight. And that person suddenly isn't in control. It's a really hard situation to be in. I actually think that everybody knowing about the idol, while in other seasons we've seen people try to do this and it has failed because eventually somebody gets scared or nervous or whatever, it actually really helped you. It didn't help Nasir, but that was because Nasir going into that smaller tribal, I just don't think was prepared for it. But it really did help you in this situation, because for them to do that, then they were signaling to one of the other eight people, whatever it was, hey, you're going to be the expendable one tonight. And when we saw that come up in conversation every now and then, that person always said, Heather was like, don't bring my name up. Nasir, don't bring my name up. Like, nobody wanted it to be them. And I think that just made you safe, because it was, well, we can't get rid of him. And if he plays the idol, we're screwed. They just needed to they needed to take a chance when you felt comfortable, and it never seems like they really earned your comfort.
Yeah, the most critical episode for me was really that split tribal, because if I could make it past that, especially if Evie goes home, I'm a lone wolf, and then at that point they're positive that I'm playing it. You know, it's a guarantee that I'm playing it. And right after that tribal council, I was like, yep, I curled up. I curled up in my corner of the shelter. It stung so much. I was like, oh man, I got so burned by Evie again. But you know what? I was like, it's fine. You know, everyone was like, you're right, Xander. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm playing my idol. I'm not going home. That's it, period. And so, like, by saying that, everybody realized, they all kind of look at each other. They're like, well, someone else's name has to be out there. And the greatest thing about the dynamics of the season is that everyone was in pairs from the pre-merge. Heather and Erica, Danny and Deshaun, Ricard and Shan. So no matter whose name gets thrown out there, that's immediately two people that I can work with, because they've been scorned by the rest of the alliance. Plus, I've got my extrovert and my idol, which means we have the majority all of a sudden, just because I said I was going to play my idol, no doubt about it.
Well, and that just goes to, normally what we'll see is like in a Terry Dietz situation way back when, and he obviously had a different idol, but if he wasn't going to play his, they could just throw the votes on somebody else. You know, like, it's always like, oh, well, if it's not going to be him, we'll get rid of Austin. If it's not going to be, but once they got rid of Evie and Tiffany, now it's, well, if we don't get rid of Xander, there's no, oh, well, this person will just get the one or two stray votes to ensure that it's still somebody from Xander's alliance. Now there's somebody from your alliance, so they can't really use you as the person to say, well, if he plays his idol, so what? It's his ally who goes home. There's no ally left.
Yeah. And I love Evie as a person. You know, Tiffany as well. They're great people. But the thing that was always so surprising as the season was coming out is that people were shocked that I wasn't trying to save Evie and Tiff. And I promise you that if I, you know, do save Evie at that tribal, that I guarantee they turn on me, because they're smart. You know, Evie's playing for $1 million just the same. They've turned on me multiple times to that point. And I was playing very grim trigger. Like, I'm going to give you the best of me, give you my unrelenting trust until you break it. And then it's gone forever. So then at that point, I knew it wouldn't really benefit me that much to save them. Saving Evie would, You know, it's not that I didn't try. I definitely did try. I thought that it would be great. Best case scenario is we're able to pull off a move and maybe get out Liana, maybe get out Deshaun. That whole, there was a lot that was removed from the edit on that particular vote out. I actually had a contingency plan, and this is something, yeah, I'd love to talk about if we could take some time to talk about this.
Roll.
This was such a great power seat for me. You know, I'd been on the bottom for so long, and I knew that the power players in the game were Shan and Deshaun. And since I had won immunity and I had the idol, and the only other person that was really, you know, on my side-ish was Evie, I knew that we could make this a great opportunity to really shake up the game. And a lot of people saw that too. The audience definitely understood that this was really the time to make a big change. And so I wanted to come up with two different scenarios using the fact that we got to go to Tribal Council second. I thought that that was, you know, something that we had earned and we could use it to leverage our decision. So I told Evie if one of Shan's went home at the first Tribal Council, then we would send home Deshaun to like even out the playing field. Because if Shan goes home or a card goes home, taking out Liana becomes much less of a priority because Liana was someone who was working for Shan, someone who's like very close to Shan. So it was kind of Shan's number type thing. And taking out Shan's close ally doesn't make sense if either Shan's not there or Ricard's not there because they don't have the majority anymore. They're not really that much in power. So that's a great opportunity to take out Deshaun, who's got Danny in his pocket, Heather in his pocket, and Erica in his pocket. So if it were one of Deshaun's numbers, we would take out Liana. If it were one of Shan's numbers, we would take out Deshaun. A very safe contingency plan to make sure that we're maximizing our vote that day, given the power that we had. And Evie went and told Deshaun. And so when Evie tells Deshaun that I'm willing to write his name down, then Deshaun's out on us. And I think it was Evie trying to build trust, you know, a very proactive player. Evie was great at trying to maximize her individual relationships. I think that was just the same instance that happened on the Journey Island of giving away information to form a bond with someone. But this information ended up costing her because it revealed that I wasn't willing to work with Deshaun as much as I was letting on. And Deshaun, you know, since I'm immune, logically just turns around and gets out Evie, which I was fine with because, again, it puts me in a position where I'm the one lone wolf. And that means that my idol has become just unimaginably powerful at that point. And then, yeah, I tried, but at that point it felt like Evie was just going to be more of a burden than an ally to keep around.
That was something I wanted to ask just based on your past two answers. I never really noticed that everybody was in such pairs, but hearing you say that out loud totally makes sense. You mentioned that you really liked being on the bottom, and I think a lot of players wouldn't come out and say that. What was it that made you like enjoy that style of play so much?
Yeah, I think if I ever went back, it'd be hard if I were on the top. I mean, I got a little taste of being in a power position at the end, but playing from the bottom, it's so, you know, you're okay with taking risks. You're okay with putting yourself out there. You're playing bolder because you don't have to worry about, you know, the target's on you. You know they're coming for you. So you may as well try and do everything you can. And especially with advantages, it's easier to maneuver because you can try and gain people to your side and you don't have to worry about being blindsided. Instead, you're turning people on the top against each other. Mm-hmm. And so that was always really fun for me. That was something that I felt I was particularly good at, is going to the person at the top and whispering in their ear, being like, hey, you know, aren't you a little worried about so-and-so? Don't you think that they've got a lot of power? Do you think they've got your best interest in mind? And so that on the bottom power versus influence debate, you know, there's a very big difference between power and influence. You can have power at the top, but people are going to know you have power. Whereas if you've got proximity to power and you've got influence, then you don't necessarily, it's, you know, you're not going to get credit as much, but you also don't have to take the fall for being, you know, you don't raise your threat level by whispering in someone's ear. It's a great way to get something done and have them not vote you out, while at the same time turning the majority against itself.
Do you think, though, on a season like season 41, and obviously this could go a million different ways, so I want to see, like, now that you've had almost, what, 6 months, 7 months to really think about this, was there any way that you could actually pull off the win on this season once you lost Tiffany and Evie? Because was this jury ever going to be like, great, you were the lone wolf, we'll give it to you, like they, like people have done in the past with Mike Holloway and situations like that? Or was this a jury that was just valuing relationships so much that once you lost yours and couldn't be, you could be in the ear of everybody and you could talk about flipping things and all of that, and you definitely were still impactful, but you were never viewed as the one who was making it happen. Do you think that you had any chance once Evie and Tiffany were gone? And if you think no, do you wish that you would have kept Evie or tried to keep Evie and Tiffany around a little bit longer? Because would that have been your only real path to win it rather than just getting further? Like, what do you think about that?
I think that this was my Cochran South Pacific game. I think that the path to get me further was the path that ends up, you know, hurting the people who I was, you know, close to. I would very much consider, I can't remember his tribe name, but Cochran's first tribe obviously, like, didn't really respect him, didn't treat him very well, and they were willing to turn on him at any point. But he saw that and flipped, and that cost him all of, you know, their respect, all of their, you know, nobody was going to work with him. But then the Majority Alliance also didn't really respect or want to work with him either. It put him in a tricky position, but that was really the only viable way that he gets further. I feel like I played a very similar game in which I knew how to get myself to the end, and that meant turning on the people that I know didn't have my best interest in hand. The problem is that they didn't realize that I knew that they didn't have my best interest in hand. They thought that I was just, you know, a team player there for the ride, like enjoying the experience, when I'm trying to upplay and minimize myself. Like, I'm trying to upplay the, like, oh yeah, like I told everyone that I was an art student. I told everyone that, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. No, like I know damn well what I want to do with my life. I'm very ambitious.
But you knew that, you knew the stereotype of long hair guy, oh, like, boy, what people were going to be looking at.
Exactly. The curly hair and, like, the laid back voice. I love that Danny said laid back as his word for me. Because if you really knew me, I'm more like Christian Hubicki. I'm very hyper frenetic. I'm a computer scientist. I talk pretty fast. I'm, like, always thinking, you know, bam, 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 neurons firing. I'm not laid back. I, you know, I can be when I want to be, when I need to be, but inside, the brain's always ticking and I'm always thinking, running the simulations on what I can do next. And I wanted to camouflage myself with my youth, with my, you know, surfer guy look. I thought that that would be the best way for me to get further, because the problem with all the golden boy types is everyone's always like, why aren't they working on their threat level? Why aren't they trying to manage their threat level, lower their threat level? So I made sure that every time, especially at Yasa, when I was, you know, like pouring my heart out to win these challenges to try and keep myself alive, I would make sure that when we got back to the beach, I went to everyone and I said, you did amazing. I can't believe we won that. You did so well. I never wanted anyone to be looking at anything good I was doing. And I feel like it worked wonders. I feel like boosting people's egos and leaning into, like, you did amazing, you're incredible, like, don't think about me, just holding up that mirror and, like, having them look at themselves, it makes them associate themselves with me. They're not actually learning more about me. They're not actually thinking about me. What they're really thinking about is how much they like themselves and how that is now associated with me. Feel like, back to your original question, I'm sorry, about, like, whether or not I could have won. I don't think I could have, especially given the fact that my argument at the end, I think, is the fact that I was lone wolf. With the 26-day format, everybody's in pairs from pre-merge because it's too quick to make those relationships post-merge that are going to be really strong. You're always going to default to trusting the person that you knew pre-merge. So it's Heather and Erica, Danny and Deshaun, Liana, and Liana did end up going with Shan for other reasons, and there was a connection that, you know, superseded the game there. And then Shan and Ricard. So those were all pre-merge pairs. And my pre-merge pair, luck of the draw, was Tiffany and Evie, who I know really didn't have my best interest in mind. They considered themselves to be in the power seat, that I really didn't have any voice at that table. And why would I want any part of an alliance where I have no sway? I'm just kind of, you know, dragged along. So it really didn't make any sense for me to stick with them. And the problem is like, if I get to the end and say that, then yeah, maybe I win, say, Nasir, or it's just, the numbers are just too tricky, because I lose Evie and Tiff guaranteed if I argue that. And then maybe I gain Nasir. Danny was always going to vote for Deshaun. Ricard at that point, so pissed at me. It's just, yeah, I had two. I think the main problem is that every single juror needed a different speech. They all had something different about me that they didn't like. For Ricard, it was that I needed to be real. For Evie and Tiff, or for Tiff, I didn't play the idol for her when that would have sent me home. For Evie, you know, I don't know exactly. I know she talked a lot about how she wanted a female winner, and I'm sure that, you know, had maybe a little bit to do with it, but Evie, at least, like, you know, I didn't do enough for her as an ally. I'm sure that was a big part of it. And then the whole awareness thing, I just don't think I was ever, I was never, it's hard to come out at the end and be like, hey, like, I've been deceiving you guys and I've been, you know, playing a minimizing game and like trying to do all this deception in a game where you've been called such a great ally by Danny. I think that was something, that was a big turning point for me when Danny said that I was a great ally. And then it became like all these, when it became more important than the show, when all these social issues got involved, it became harder to kind of pull out the curtain and say, look, I've been Oz behind the curtain. Like, I've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes and deceiving and manipulating. And it was just really tricky to navigate what would have been okay to them, or what would have been like, oh, well, like, yeah, that doesn't, I don't think there was any winning speech or any case in which I can make to the jury that, that pleases everyone.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you, to get every vote, you needed to do something contradictory from what you would need for somebody else's vote, when otherwise, I feel like you've seen in previous seasons, like, if somebody had just owned up to that one thing at Final Tribal, then maybe they would have won. While it sounds like for this, there were a lot of different scenarios. If you could do it all over again, if you ever get the chance to do it all over again, do you lean into the curly hair, bro? Do you lean farther away? What do you think worked for you, and what do you think didn't?
Let me make sure. I just plugged my...
You guys still hear me?
Yep.
Good. Okay, perfect. I'd say if I ever came back, it'd be impossible to. The rookie season's the only time you can ever truly use deception. Basically, like, you know, in the similar way that Shan couldn't go back out there and be the warm and fuzzy pastor, because everybody knows what her confessionals are like. Russell Hance with the whole fireman thing. It's like, only the only way that that would ever work is if I went back to back season. So I think that's out of the cards. And I even tried, the reason why I thought there was hope is because Ricard knew all of this. I told Ricard all of this, and he was someone who truly knew how I was playing and my strategies and how much I was thinking, how calculated I was. So I thought Ricard would be a good half Murphy candidate, especially since he's the biggest target on the board. It makes sense to take him out. I would have been the dumbest survivor ever for not taking him out and playing my idol for him. So it was almost too good to be true, where I could take out the biggest threat in Ricard by not playing the idol and, you know, fulfill that, hey, Erica, like, we can get him out later. I'll play my extra vote for to save him now, because I don't want to take any chances of you flipping. I need him as my shield in. And then it finally pays off by being able to take him out. It's like perfect. And at the same time, Ricard also knows me the best. He's the person that I was closest to out there. He knows exactly how I was playing, and I thought that he would respect the move. So that reveal of like, hey, Ricard, guess what, I've been playing really hard, I don't think it really I think once you lower your threat level and you minimize yourself, it's so impossible to come back from that unless you've got someone advocating for you. But they're going to be pissed because in some sense you sent them on the jury, and they're going to wonder, wait, was he playing me?
Yeah, and I think it's always interesting to see how people come out and play completely different games their second time around, or if they play the same game and it screws them and then they play a third time. And we saw it with Tony where he played the same game the first two times, and the second time he gets voted out really early, and then he totally changes the perception of him, and it really worked for him. Another thing, though, that I can't help but think as you're talking about this and how Ricard was still so angry with you and how everything was still very raw, it actually feels like to me, despite the fact that the 26 days didn't really seem to have much of an impact on the viewing experience, because I really didn't notice the entire season, it does seem like in terms of when it came to the jury, that actually had a big impact because there was no time to really just get over it. If you think about it, normally the first juror is out at Ponderosa for almost 3 full weeks. And if they're there for 3 full weeks, they have plenty of time to even forget what you look like, let alone like worry about what you said to them. But Ricard, I mean, we could see it very much at this reunion at the end, was still so like into it. He could not be removed. And normally the fifth place person has a little bit more time to kind of remove themselves from the game. Do you think that also ended up hurting you? And in your honest opinion, do you think that you would be better on a 39-day season, or do you think that this 26 hyper speed season was a good thing for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I definitely agree that the 26-day format had a much bigger impact than the viewing experience. I think, again, those early relationships are so important because it's going to be so hard to get people to trust you in a matter of days. Like the third merge boot, we've still only known each other for 4 or 5 days. And that's like a very short amount of time to maybe 6 days, a short amount of time to get someone to convince you that, hey, you should trust me more than you should trust the person that you've been playing the whole game with. I think that's why, for me at least, it took a long time for me to build, like, you know, dig my roots in enough to actually work with people to get them to trust me and for me to trust them. I only had an actual alliance, like, yeah, pretty late into the merge. Mm-hmm. And then I would say that it leaves the jurors are all still fresh. When Ricard, right, like Final Tribal, it's just days after Ricard's gone home. So there's really not a lot of time at all. It's especially towards the back half of the game, like the final five, it's like day. Like really not much time at all to get over it. And I think that aspect of it would have helped me in a 39-day season, that mm-hmm. especially since everyone, you know, is self-proclaimed super fans, and now there's sort of the stigma that you should vote for the person who screwed you over mm-hmm. because that's good strategy. That's usually the sentiment for juries, but I feel like would have been the case in a 39-day season, but with the 26-day season, it's harder to get over that raw emotion, especially mm-hmm. when people think that I've been deceiving. I think that there's a lot more to talk about with that whole, like, you know, is it genuine type thing. Mm-hmm. But I do think the 26-day format helped me a lot in the fact that I've got a very effectual sense of reasoning. I'm, you know, entrepreneurial in the way that I think rather than managerial. I'm not causal logic, which means that, like, I don't set goals and go after them and try and find ways to get to that goal. Instead, I understand the means that I have with me and think of all the different possible outcomes and just go for the best outcome. But I'm not dead set on like a goal. I just know what I have to work with me, my strengths and weaknesses, and I go with the flow and sort of try for the best outcome. Like, you can't set me back. And mm-hmm. with the heavy advantages in the 26-day format, it's very go, go, go. You need to be able to think on your feet. You need to not just set concrete goals and get thrown off of those goals. You need to be able to just be fluid and adaptable and use what you have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and no, I love that answer, because I think that for us watching, it didn't really make much of an impact. And a lot of it was nitpicking with the 26 days. I mean, at the end of the day, we all want to see 39. And I know when you talk to ex-survivors, they're going to be like, hey, I didn't even make the merge, and I was voted out on day 18 or 19. And I think Tiffany was probably around the same time, and she was the first juror, and then it just keeps, it was just so quickly one after the other. Mm-hmm. It was very, very quick. I want to make sure you're still there too. So I'm just, I'm kind of dragging out my answer.
Yeah. Sorry. I think I lost you there for a second. Something happened.
All good. You're back. Yeah, no, I mean, I was just kind of talking, I'm just talking about like with the shorter days, it does seem like something that, while it didn't have much of an impact to us, it was something that everybody on this season was always talking about. And I think the hardest thing that Survivor has been having over the past couple seasons is explaining to us, the audience, exactly what it is that the cast is going through. Because back in like season one, season two, season three, we got that full-fledged every time. In the fun days from like 10 through 20, we really got to see and understand with the idols and the and Exile Island and all the different things that everybody was going through. I think with the 26 days, I don't like just telling us, oh, it's so fast. Isn't this crazy? Like, we're still watching it every Wednesday night. It doesn't feel any different to us. So how do we get that expressive? Because honestly, I'm looking at you and I'm like, he doesn't look like he lost all that much weight. I'm sure he did, but he doesn't look any different. Ricard doesn't look like he's starving. There was no Courtney Yates on this season. So I just, I wonder how Survivor, if they're going to continue to have 26 days, which we know season 42 will be, how are they going to be able to kind of communicate with us the difficulty that all of you are going through, and especially how different it made the game? Because to me, it didn't feel like that different of a game.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And it's only a 40-minute episode, so it's just so difficult to convey all these different themes and emotions and, you know, the advantages as well as how the season has changed. I think it's more something that they're just going to have to show like they did. They just show the cast talking about it, and you can kind of try and empathize with it. Yeah, it really is. Then again, I've never played a 39-day season, so it's possible that all the things I was feeling were just, you know, getting caught up in all the things that are just true of Survivor. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. It is. And that's like the thing that's coolest about talking with friends and people who come to watch parties or family, is getting that perspective from the outsider, from someone who wasn't there. And it is really, like, it's almost not even as if it's a different type of season. Like, nobody acknowledged the 26-day thing because it feels the same watching it. All the only difference is that occasionally they say, you know, they show the cast saying, oh, it's so much harder now and it's so much faster, all that. But yeah, I agree. I think that that is something that I think would be a good piece of information for all the viewers at home, is like, you know, it's so hard to say. I don't want to outright say that it's harder to be faster, because I just don't know. I'd have to play a 39-day version. I really wish I could say, like, oh, my God, it's so much harder because you need to think fast and, you know, everybody's name's always out there and it's chaotic and it's nuts and you need to be able, like, there's no rest day. You know, if you take a day to rest and, you know, try and center yourself, if you're gone for, like, 30 minutes, you're going home. That's why the provider type, gone. You, like, there's never going to be another type as long as the 26-day season exists. I never went fishing. I collected wood. I'd light fire. I'd do the stuff that I could still talk with people, the social providing, but I never went off on my own. And you can't really, if you go off on your own, even when you're gone for a confessional, like, that's it. That's the amount of time it takes, because everybody's working so quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty, that's wild. And to go backwards a step, talking about Ricard, talking about a 40-minute episode, we were, as viewers, like, kind of shocked to see that you and Ricard were so close. Could you talk about sort of like when you two got close? Tell us about your relationship with them.
I know the relationships this season, especially on my end, they just did not show any relationships with me.
I suppose
the ends justify the means. You know, I had no friends in the end, so of course the, you know, the edit's going to reflect that. But yeah, I was a lot closer with everyone out there than, you know, but like, why focus on someone who, like, why focus on the zero vote finalists relationships? You know, it's like, they just don't have the time in 40 minutes to show, like, oh, Xander's like having so much fun with all these people and like caring for them and, you know, putting his blanket over them when they're cold and, like, you know, digging holes so that he can block the wind and keep them warm and, like, making fire and, you know, making his knuckles bloody when he's lighting it because it's, you know, the flint's warm. going down so much that you just have to scrape at the bottom. Like, mm-hmm. no, they're not going to take any time to show any of that stuff. Ricard and I's relationship, we had a great relationship. It was so much fun. And I loved every minute of it. And it started way back with the Tiffany vote. So I was supposed to go home that night. That was when people threw out Nasir's name, people threw out Heather's name, and I was like, something's up. I'm going to talk to Erica because I know Erica wouldn't be cool with voting out Heather. So I was like, I brought Erica and Shan over to the fire. I was like, listen, Shan, tell me who the vote is for. And Shan, of course, had to say Heather. And Erica's like, oh, well, that's not what I heard. So Erica goes off and tells Heather. That's a bunch of chaos that's now happening. And Ricard starts to hear about this, realizes that like there's a chance that I might not be going home. But we had this moment right before Tribal where, you know, we both walked out to the sun setting right before Tribal. We're looking out over the water and he's like, oh man, like it would suck if one of us went home after stepping down for Rice for the Tribe, especially after people had been so ungrateful. That was something that I was really like, especially with the whole talk about like sitting with the losers and trying to make relationships with them. That was very key in stepping down for Rice with the Tribe. I knew that, you know, Shan and Ricard would think that, and it's probably true, they'd think that they would have won the challenge if they had participated. And especially with Danny and Sean saying, like, we don't even want the rice. Like, you know, it's terrible. Like, we want a steak. Like, the rewards sucked this season. I knew that Ricard was going to be rightfully a little annoyed by that. So I would go to Ricard and I'd be like, I can't believe they don't appreciate that we stepped down. Anyway, Ricard and I, at the sunset, we just give each other a big hug and we're like, hey, listen, if this is the last night, just know that, like, I'm so grateful for the experience and grateful to have met all these incredible people. And so at Tribal, he's telling me to play my idol. You know, I still don't even know if that was he says that that's because I was supposed to get the majority of votes. I haven't asked him. I don't ask anybody about anything about the season because I don't think they're going to tell the truth. And I don't even bother to know the truth. Whatever happened out there happened. I don't care to know all the, you know, the little details. But at least from what he's told me, I was supposed to go home. And he was genuinely saying, play the idol. He flipped his vote from me to Tiffany. And that really started and kicked off our relationship. And from then on, you know, it was always him and I strategizing and talking. There was one of the big movers of our relationship was a fake idol hunt that they didn't show that I caused. I planted a bunch of fake idols around the island and went out and found them. This is after Evie was gone. So this was, again, that lone wolf. Anything that I have is so much more powerful than any, you know, than it would be if you were in the majority. So I went out and did a fake idol hunt. This is Liana's secret scene where she's chasing me around and shoving me into the mud. We were looking for. This is a whole story in and of itself. Keep the going. Whole thing was keep like going. Shakespearean comedy. It was amazing. So I planted the fake idol and I wake up and I know that the whole island is going to, like, you know, chaos is going to unleash if I go off on my own, because everybody knows that I'm the next person to go. I'm the only one without any alliances. I'm the one who's definitely, like, next on the chopping block, the easiest person to throw out in terms of name anyway. So I walk out, and then, of course, I'm immediately followed by Deshaun and Liana. I grab the fake idol that I've planted. I run, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog style, just like Woo, through the jungle. And it had been raining all night, so I slipped. I was running, being chased by Liana. I slip and fall, and I drop the idol. So I can't find the fake idol that I had made and planted and then found. And so then a genuine idol hunt for me ensued, where I'm actually looking for the fake idol that I had made and planted. And Liana, anytime I reach for something, Liana shoves me out of the way and tries to grab it. And I'm like, oh God, this is like the most frustrating thing ever. Like, this was supposed to go so well. And I was just supposed to run away. And, you know, they think I have something, but now I'm actually looking for it, because if someone finds it, it's full of Yasa tree mail. So they would know that it's mine. I wrapped my old cloth in Yasa Tremail, and then I had a bunch of bracelets that I made because back when I made the fake idol on day six for the Oleana thing, I had made a bunch of fake idols. But anyway, I knew people would like get my, you know, they'd catch me if they found it. So I'm looking for it, and this carries on for hours, and Liana won't leave me alone. Eventually, people just like kind of die out. But Ricard comes up to me when I'm looking, and Ricard's like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "I found an idol. I'm looking for it." He's like, "Oh, don't worry. Nasir planted a bunch of fakes. I found it. Here you go. It's just a bunch of tree males. But thank you for trusting me enough to tell me that you found an idol." And then right after that, Ricard is like, "Let's get Shan." And I'm like, "Yeah, let's put the work in. I've got the advantages. We can try and find people. I'm sure the people on the bottom, like Nasir, like, Nasir might have been, yeah, Nasir was gone at that point. Like, mm-hmm. Heather, like, Erica would be willing to work with us." And that was really, like, the start of, like, oh, wow, like, Ricard and I were emotionally close. Now we can be strategically close. And, you know, we had our own corner of the shelter. The big moment that they didn't show that Ricard and I, you know, both hold pretty dearly is that Ricard told me one morning after, you know, he was cold at night and I had, you know, kind of brought him in and gave him some of my, I let him in, I had the cardigan, so I wrapped the cardigan around him, and I had so much body heat, so I kept him warm, and he was shivering, I felt so bad, we had that, like, you know, tender moment in the shelter, and he woke up, and he was like, "I've never had a friend like you, like a straight friend, who's so comfortable around a gay man," and I said, "You know, well, that's surprising to me, because if you're confident in your sexuality, it shouldn't matter what the sexuality of someone else is." So I thought that that was something that I really stood by. You know, a lot of my really close friends are gay, and like, it just so shocking to me that that would be a factor in like how close or comfortable you'd feel around someone. So that meant a lot to me. There were tears, and that was like a big solidifying moment for our relationship. So it makes sense why he would be so hurt by me turning on him. It's because when you start playing a game where you genuinely care about people and you show kindness and you show empathy, it's just going to bite you in the ass, because eventually your smartest move is going to be to take out the person that you care about, and they're going to be left feeling on Ponderosa like, wow, was any of that real?
Yeah.
And the worst part is that he went back to Ponderosa with a bunch of other people who also felt I was ingenuine, who also didn't really like me, who also were willing to. It was just, you know, a cycle of like, hey, you know, because, you know, I also took care of people at Yasa, like during storms. I was trying to keep them warm. I built a fire shelter. I was, you know, giving people my jacket. And so for a lot of people, it was like, oh, at Ponderosa, like, he's nice to everyone, it's not genuine, when really that should be an indicator that it's so genuine. Yeah. Because it doesn't matter who you are, I like want to show human kindness to everybody because everybody deserves it. And it just ended up biting me so much in the ass, because then that whole like, it's ingenuine, it's performative, it's strategy starts to manifest, because people are like, well, oh, you know, he put his jacket around you, he did the same thing to me. So I get why Ricard was so mad at Final Tribal.
Yeah, and then you're sitting there at the, you know, at Ponderosa drinking and just talking shit about you, and there's nothing that you can do about it because you can't be there to defend yourself, and that's right. The perception is going to be the reality. But while that is all nice and well, and I love that you and Ricard, now I actually understand why there's this relationship, I have to ask about Liana, because the two of you had one of the most bizarre downfalls. I don't even know what the heck happened. I mean, you would breathe and Liana's eyes would roll so far back in her head, and she could not keep it together. What happened to the two? Cause then we also see these secret scenes of it kind of being like fun and like over the top and like a brother's just, what happened between you? Like, what was going on out there that we did not get to see?
Well, so that was the coolest thing about watching the season back, is because I hadn't seen anything Liana was saying. So for her to say she hates my face was a genuine shock. Like, my jaw hit the floor. I was at a watch party at a bar, And I was like on the floor, like cracking up laughing, like, no way. Because the whole time I did think it, I'm a very playful guy. I'm like lighthearted. Nothing's, you really can't do anything to me that I'm going to be like, oh, I hate you. Like, I'm just not a hateful person. It takes so, so much to get me to be like genuinely angry. And so for me, it was always playful. It was always just like, you know, fun and games and a little bit of like a brother sister type thing. And it was just really shocking to see that whole, like, I hit his face scene. I do think it was probably.
Wait, we just lost you. We just lost you. So I'm going to remember, Alexa, that he got cut off. Xander, you got cut off at the part where you said you couldn't believe.
He's trying to talk, Phil.
No, he's on. He's muted.
Yeah, I think you did that.
No, I didn't mute him.
Please hold. There you go.
Yes, you're back. Go.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I think that one thing that really got under her skin is that I should have been gone a lot, but I was always doing things behind the scenes to whisper in people's ears to try and get them to think, hey, you know, Xander's on my side. His advantages are mine. Like, he's going to help me get further. I can use him as a pawn. So every time it looked like I should have gone, the Tiffany vote, the Voce vote, I was putting in so, 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 so much work to make sure that it was not going to be me. That's why at the end of the Voce vote, you see me say like, oh, I feel so bad about this. Like, oh man, like, I feel terrible. And everyone, you know, in the audience is like, well, what the hell? Like, he had something to do with that. It's like, yeah, you know, they just don't have enough time to show all the crazy dynamics that go into a vote. And I knew that it was either going to be me or Voce, because the girls would always go off and wash clothes together. So there's clearly an alliance there. And so I knew that the best case scenario for me was to just throw Voce under the bus, expose the fact that he's told me he has a final two deal with Evie, tell Tiff that, make sure there's paranoia, make sure people know that he's a neurosurgeon, he's calculated, that he goes to UChicago, and he's, you know, this incredibly smart guy, just try and fuel the flame and like lower myself and raise his threat level. So, you know, I was always putting in like small behind the scenes work. And Liana, from Liana's perspective, I'm sure it looks like, oh, well, let's get Xander. He's good at challenges. He's got advantages. It'd be stupid not to take him out. And every time it was stupid not to take me out. And she realized that. So I can see why she'd be getting so mad, is like, she sees a clear good move in taking me out and nobody will listen to her. And yeah, like, I do think, you know, I read her interviews and I understand, we've talked a lot. We're all good now. She's amazing. She's an incredible person, like, no hard feelings whatsoever. But we talked about the early game and she noticed that I really clicked with Evie, that I, sorry, my friend just knocked on the window. He's seeing if I'm all right.
I mean, if he wants to come.
What was that?
If he wants to come hang, he's welcome.
Oh, he's welcome.
Is it Lauren?
I've been on the interview.
Liana talked about early game, and she talked about how I instantly kind of clicked with Evie, and that was true. I think I was a little bit too open about how I really liked Evie. I loved getting to know her. We were very close, very talkative, and her energy is just, you know. If they're listening, her energy is just, it's unstoppable. Like, oh God, it's so infectious and it's so easy to get caught up in it. She's so fun. That's just amazing. And so Liana noticed that. And Liana noticed that I wasn't letting her in on the idol information, which is interesting because I also didn't let Tiff in on the idol information. Mm-hmm. And I also technically did not let Evie and Voce in either, because they walked up on me while I was putting the still reading the, you know, absolute book of instructions on my idol. So really, I got walked up on. It made it look like I went to Evie and Voce and was like, hey guys, I found an idol. Really, that was me thinking on the fly and being like, shit, I've got this thing in my hands, I can't let them see it, or at least let them think that I wasn't gonna tell them. So I think it was just circumstances led Liana to believe that I wasn't interested in working with her and that I didn't trust her. And I did, honestly, she's very perceptive in the fact that I thought she was lowering her threat level the same as I was. I think we were playing very parallel games in the sense that, you know, she told me about her McKinsey internship and that she goes to Georgetown and that she, you know, she's athletic. I'm thinking, oh my God, triple threat, and yet nobody else is kind of seeing this. She's going to be one of the people when all the dust settles, she's the traditional winner, where she's the one who's like, oh my God, how could we have not have thought to get her out? So it was mutual. It was like a, you know, I respect you and I see you, so I'm not going to work with you because I don't trust you, and vice versa. She sees the same thing in me. She sees that I'm lowering myself and that I'm trying to hold back. So I just think that given the circumstances, we were never going to work together. But as people, I think, yeah, definitely a fun relationship there. Very good for TV. As a big fan of the show, I could not be more thankful for that line, because that's just so iconic. That's one of those lines that's going to go down in the annals of Survivor history. Yeah, I could not stop watching it. That was so funny.
It was so funny. And it went for, it was like, it sounds like us as viewers went through the same path that you did. And we were like, oh, cool. Like brother, sister, like good vibe. And then like you guys, she like hated you like a brother and sister. And then it seemed to kind of net out totally fine. It was like that. In parallel with like the Shannon Ricard brother sister bickering was like awesome, just like character development.
Yeah, no, exactly. I love the arcs, and our narrative arc, especially with me only having my perspective. So crazy to see that other side. That was one of the best things about watching the season back, is like, oh wow, I get to see, you know, someone whose narrative arc I shared. I get to see their point of view on things, which was super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and we were totally duped by the editors that Yasa was going to end up just, you know, coming back and being the little tribe that could. We had the turtle scene, we had all of that. And really, as soon as the merge hit, you all imploded. All four of you were just like, goodbye, we're done with each other. It is time to move on and figure out what else to do. And I just thought it was interesting what we got early on. It really did seem like you were going to be the underdog tribe. But I guess when the winner comes from a tribe as dominant as Luvu, you got to have an underdog story in there, even if it doesn't come true, because people are going to be invested in an underdog story.
Yeah, and something interesting about the early Yasa dynamic is you see emotionals in which I'm talking about, you know, oh man, this could be the underdog story. This could be, you know, the four that actually stick together and, you know, take on the majority alliance. And that was genuine, because I knew that it wouldn't benefit me. Am I still, are we all good? Oh, yeah, okay. I knew it wouldn't benefit me to have the mentality that, like, oh, the girls are working against me, I'm screwed, like, I'm alone on the bottom of my own minority alliance. I knew that if I just continued to have faith in the alliance and believe that we were going to work together, that they would absorb that energy, and they would understand that, like, oh, he's committed. Because if I think for a moment, like, oh, man, you know, they're going to turn on me the instant that, you know, they have the opportunity, they're going to pick up on my, you know, subconscious signaling, my body language, my energy, and they're going to realize, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be as trusting. So if I'm more, you know, gung-ho, like, because at that point, I didn't have any concrete information that they didn't want to work with me. I only had intuition. So if I just go for, you know, believing that they're going to work with me and we're going to do this together and be an underdog story, like, I would have loved the Yasa underdog story. That would have been amazing. It would have been a way, you know, it would have been like one of those incredible old school Survivor seasons where you're like, how do they keep doing it? Like Foa Foa or I Too, you know, it's just like a real galvanizing story. And I love Survivor for the story that it tells. So I really wanted that to be the case. I wanted it to be an underdog story. But, you know, with everything building up and then with Deshaun saying that, you know, Evie had told him about the idol and that she was going to vote me out, it certainly, I knew at that point that, oh, I've got my concrete information now. I've been on the fringe this entire time, knowing that they've been going off together and washing clothes and strategizing without me. And that I've just been like, oh, you know, have you guys been talking strategy? And they're like, no, we're not. Like, I know what's up. I just don't want to believe it, because it doesn't benefit me to believe it. If I outright say, you know, I'm on the bottom of the Yasa 4, how does that benefit me? It doesn't, yeah. Really. The only thing that it changes is that they now know that I know something, and that hurts me, because then they're going to be on to the fact that, like, oh, we got to get him before he turns on us. Whereas in the other case, if I just stay quiet, lay low, and like know that I'm on the bottom, I can tactically turn when I need to. And it's all about timing.
So, okay, all of this, I love all of this and like why Yasa and all of that. And you know, it makes sense because at the beginning, I think we were all saying when Voce went, we were like, why did Voce just go home? How was it not Tiffany? What is going on here? And if it's not Tiffany, why was it not Xander? Like, what are they doing? So, but I want to talk about these early days of Yasa because I think it's very important to what's going to be happening in the future of Survivor. And I'm curious what you think because you were so negatively the recipient of these things. On this season, we saw some of the craziest twists ever. I mean, we saw six people win and then be told they lost. And, you know, nobody was happy with that. We also saw, though, these beware advantages. Now, you're walking out onto this island. You don't know that that exists. You're just going out there and you're like, great, it's Survivor. I'll probably, you know, it might hurt me a little bit. Maybe I'll have a disadvantage in a challenge or I won't get rice or who knows. But to lose your vote and to have lost your vote for so long and possibly not even get this idol, and you have to say these crazy phrases that nobody in their right mind would ever say, do you think, obviously for 42, we're going to get the same thing. People aren't going to have seen what Xander did, what Nasir did, or what Shannon Ricard did. But do you think that if they try to keep kind of these similar type beware advantages and these phrases and things like that going into season 43, that people might get in a situation where they see it and they say, I'm actually not going to pick that up, which isn't really what Survivor's going to want at that point, right? Like, they want the advantages in the game. That's why they're putting them there. But do you think people will kind of learn from Xander should have been the second person voted out of Survivor this year, third person, whatever it would have been, whenever you would have gone. What do you think?
I think that there are two points that I would have against it changing the way people react to advantages. I would say, one, it doesn't come across on TV exactly how difficult it is to survive without a vote. Nobody has any idea. Nobody ever will, because I was the only one who went to Tribal this season without a vote and survived. Like, in the early game, you're looking for any reason to vote someone out. It's like, you know, someone is too bossy building shelter, or someone says something that nobody else jives with. It's any little thing that everyone can kind of just be like, oh, easy vote. We want to look for an easy vote. So to have no vote that early on, it's so easy. Everybody can just turn to you and be like, well, you've got no power. Nobody's going to raise any complaints voting you out. You should be the one to go home. But I don't think that shows up on TV, especially when they bury me in that episode and they don't show any work that I'm putting in. They're not showing that I had to put in a ton of legwork to make sure that it was not me going home and that it was either Voce. And, you know, at that point, I knew it wasn't going to be Tiff. So at that point, it's like there's no surprise. You know, every vote out has to be a surprise. And if I'm putting in so much work to get Voce to go home because I know it's either him or me, then that's not surprising. But yeah, Nobody's seeing how much work it takes to survive that. It kind of just looks like I walked out of that alive, unscathed for no reason, when really that was like so hard to pull off. And just like, it should have been me by any means. The other reason I'd say is that I felt the same way. I saw Beware and they cast people who just love the show. They cast people who are exciting and energetic and adventurous. And I think they know exactly what makes us tick. And one of those things is seeing an opportunity to have this power in the game or be a part of some, you know, Survivor new experience. And I knew instantly once I found it, didn't matter what it said. It could have said, you're, you know, sending yourself home. I was still going to open it because I needed to know. I have that curiosity. I have that adventurous spirit. And that's similar to a lot of other Survivor players and the people that they look for in casting, is people who are going to go out there and take risks. I don't think people are going to, you know, it's possible if it's the same type of twists. 42, obviously they filmed back to back, so 42 we'll probably see people going for it. The numbers would say no, don't take it. I mean, three other people got voted out with their idols this season. It really didn't benefit anybody except for me, and when it did benefit me, I knew I wasn't going home, so it really made no sense. The only real benefit it had to me was bluffing, and that was, you know, super effective. However, I think that if you're looking from a numbers perspective, yeah, don't take it. But the curiosity, the human nature in Survivor players is always going to lead them to take that risk and go for broke.
It's like when Jamal like takes the literal hanging advantage in front of his face and then he gets punished for it. Like, I think like there's so like the game of Survivor, the point is to take the risk and you'll get rewarded. And I think in recent seasons now, instead of getting rewarded, you're getting sort of,
I got cut out for a little bit. Sorry.
Oh, you're good. No, you seem fine back.
Oh man, I still can't hear. Let me see.
Uh-oh. All right.
Hi.
Alexa, I would say keep making the point and I will let Xander know.
Okay, that. I'm going to talk to myself.
No, I'm listening.
Happy to have you here.
I'm listening. I care.
It's, you know, now you are, as a player, I would feel discouraged from taking these risks because why win immunity with, I can have it taken away for no reason, or why go for that hanging advantage when Jamal loses his vote that way. So I think it just creates like a different type of mentality in player, which I think we sort of talked about with the 26 day versus 39 day season. I can continue to talk to.
Yeah. He can't hear us. So, I'm going to tell him to leave and come back and see if that works.
Maybe his friend cut out the sound.
That's what it seems like happened. It seems like you know, we are having that freeze down here in the,
How cold is it? You, Xander, before we went live, Xander used the word shivering to describe himself.
Yeah.
To which I then commented that I am currently in Massachusetts and Phil and Xander are in Florida.
Cold, it's freezing. It was 56 degrees earlier. It's 63 right now. It's cold.
Oh God, I could cry.
It's cold. My toes hurt. It's so cold in here. but no, I agree with you. I'm curious, and obviously now we're kind of talking around anything with Xander since Xander is coming back. Maybe we'll see.
I'm glad that he and Liana are friends. It's a truly beautiful finish.
It is. It is. And I'm kind of happy with a lot of this cast, like what you hear afterwards. It doesn't seem like there's as much negativity towards each other as we see on some seasons. And some seasons, even when they talk positively about each other, it's pretty obvious. Like, don't really like that person. Wish you hadn't talked to me about them. I'm not really getting that so far, at least like with Ricard's exit press and you know, Xander's and Erica's and Deshaun's. I do want to ask about Deshaun, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get there. We'll see what he says. Here we go. He's back. He's back as Xander 2.0. Let's see if this works.
Here, I'll ditch this, Xander.
Let's make sure it works. Let's see. There he is. Xander, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you guys now. Thank you for being cool under pressure. I appreciate that.
we've done this to each other millions of times. So let me kick. I'm going to kick this. Okay, you did it, Alexa. Good. All right, Alexa. So
you wanted to ask about Deshaun.
I did. So something that I think a lot of people have been asking, obviously, and I said a little bit over an hour and 7 minutes in, and somehow this hasn't come up yet. And God, we can't just sit here and pat you on the back for the whole time. This final four decision was one of the like biggest unanimous confused moments from the Survivor fan base in a very long time, probably since Natalie White won the game. People really could not understand what you were thinking, taking Erica, putting Heather against Deshaun. One, why didn't you just go against Erica, who you knew you could have beaten at Fire? Why didn't you put Deshaun versus Erica? Why did you feel so confident you could beat Erica? So my question is, one, do you think that had you gone to the end with Deshaun and Heather that you could have won that game? Would you have gotten more votes? And two, what was it that Erica did that kind of made her just seem so easy to beat to you, or at least like that you just felt like, you know what, this one I have. And then my third one is just, does Deshaun win in any situation, or were people just so against him at this point? So three questions, but you know, you don't have to answer them in order. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah. I can talk about the final, the fire making decision first. So I didn't think that I could beat Erica so easily. In fact, that was more of a, I'll explain it. There are so many parts, so many moving pieces that go into this decision that it's so impossible to just like, say on TV in like a minute. First thing is that Erica, in my eyes, had played a good strategic game, but so had I. So I felt like in terms of the state of the world of the jury, you know, I'm a game theorist and you have to work for state of the worlds. You want to maximize your opportunity across different states of the worlds, which sometimes doesn't mean going for the best in one option, but going for the best in both options and kind of like casting a wider net. So I knew that Erica had played a good strategic game, but I thought that she didn't have a lot to talk about in terms of, you know, at least from what the jury was saying with like her relationships, that she didn't know Evie. She didn't know Tiffany. She really hadn't had much time to meet them. So I knew that she didn't have that big of a relationship with them, and it would be more in terms of like relationship with the other people on the jury that they would be able to advocate for her. She didn't interact with Shan that much. In fact, Shan was usually the one writing her name down. But yeah, she played a great strategic game and an underdog story similar to mine. But I thought the pre-merge really made up for that. I thought in a situation where it's just Erica and I in a vacuum, I think we both played good strategic games. I think we both played underdog games, but I had to play the whole game, whereas Erica was only eligible to be voted out for four tribals. Whereas I had to go through the pre-merge and fight so hard in the challenges. And in addition to that, I had to go without a vote and still convince people to keep me around, even though I had this imminent threat of power in getting the idol. And I thought that was my leverage over her. Whereas if the state of the world is in terms of like, Deshaun's a great talker, Deshaun's got a great story, and he's an amazing like performer and entertainer and just a great orator. So I thought if they were going for story and you know, how someone represented the season and how well they could talk about their narrative, after all the tribals where Deshaun talked about how hard it was to represent people and how much the burden, like I thought that there was no way that was a losing speech in the end. I thought that he was so great at captivating everyone. So I knew that Erica and Deshaun both had their pros, but if I face them off against each other in fire, whoever wins out of that, they take it on. Regardless, I think that Deshaun or Erica, if one of them wins, they take the win, because fire making is the most recent thing in their minds. It's something that's fresh. It's something that, you know, they can say, oh, well, you didn't step in and make fire. You put them against each other, and that's your fault. So I wanted to kind of like, you know, in the same way that Natalie was blamed for putting Tony and Sarah against each other, I didn't want the two biggest people to, the two biggest contenders for the win to face off against each other, because I knew that that would be an argument against me. What I did want is I wanted to like cushion myself as much as I could. So I thought the best plan of action was to not give Erica another move, because then she's stepping outside of that. You know, she had great strategy, but she didn't have anything flashy. She didn't have any idol plays, any advantages, anything to do with like twists and the challenges she won. She didn't, you know, she won the split challenge and she had an advantage to skip half of the second challenge. So I thought that I didn't want to give her that flashy fire making move, because that would be the ultimate like missing piece in her puzzle. Something that I certainly had in terms of like flashy advantage stuff. The other part of that is that if Deshaun beats Heather, it's not that, like, it's not that crazy, because a lot of people didn't have that much respect for Heather. She's lovely, but I don't think people, if Deshaun or Erica wins fire, they're like, wow, they took out the other, you know, big contender. But if someone takes out Heather, it's not as much of a move. It's more so just like, oh, that's what you would expect, because she's older and because people were expecting that, you know, she would lose in fire. Nobody's seen anybody other than Nasir and myself make fire. And then the other thing is that I talked thoroughly with Heather and Deshaun, and they both said that they would vote for me if they lost in fire. I gave them an out. I said, if you tell me that you won't vote for me and you think I played a better game, then I won't put you in fire and I'll step in. This is what was the only frustrating part about the whole, you know, Heather and I talking. Heather did tell me she thinks Erica has a good shot at beating me. And I thought that that was interesting, because Deshaun said the same thing, although I thought Deshaun was doing that so that he could get that piece of fire making to win the game. Whereas with Heather, it was genuine. And so when Heather told me that, I said, Heather, if you lost in fire, would you vote for me? Do you think I played the better game? Because if not, then I'm not putting you in fire, because I don't want someone on the jury who's not going to vote for me. And Deshaun said he would vote for me. And then Heather told me she would vote for me. So I thought, out of sending them on the jury, like one of them goes home and one of them is guaranteed to vote for me. At least that's what Heather told me. I don't know if maybe I, you know, she just felt pressured to say yes, but it doesn't make sense, because why would you say yes?
I will. You would want to say no.
Right.
Yeah, you would want to say no because then the incentive is to not put you in fire. So that's why I was like, there's no way she's just saying that, because if she said no, I won't vote for you, then she's not in fire and I'll step in myself. Mm-hmm. So I was convinced that either of the two who I put in fire would vote for me. At least that's what they told me. I don't know if Ponderosa changed that. I don't know if, you know, they wanted to go along with other jury members. It's hard to say, but from my point of view, the move that I made would, one, not give Erica a move. Two, it wouldn't be that thrilling for whoever won the fire making. It wouldn't be that great of a piece on their resume, whether it was Deshaun or Heather that won. Mm-hmm. And if it was Heather that won, I could, before fire making, I could say, you know, you guys don't think Heather's going to win this, but Heather's going to win this, I'm sure of it. And that's what I did. I kind of put all my eggs in that basket of Heather winning because I trained her all day. I helped her make fire. I taught her all my tricks, and I thought she had it. I knew she could do it. And I'm a risky player. I play bold. I go for broke. And that was my last and final big risk, was saying to the jury who doesn't really respect Heather, listen, and Heather's going to win. She's going to prove you guys wrong. Watch this. And I was so ready for it to happen. And it was so close. You can see
basically happened.
Oh, you can see me smiling because I'm like, the fire, it's on the rope. It's on the rope. Mm-hmm. I know she's got it. And I was waiting for it to snap, and it never did. So I really did bank on that's, I think, my fault, is that I banked on Heather winning. But otherwise, I feel like strategically it was very sound, the decision. And in the case of me stepping in with Erica, the only reason why I would say that that was possibly a bad move is because if the jury's already out on me, and what Deshaun had said, Deshaun's truth kamikaze, I'm sure if you guys talk to Erica, she'll mention it. It was a lot more than they showed. You know, he had mentioned that Erica hadn't done anything to, you know, warrant a win, that she wasn't, you know, the top player on the board, that I was. And so if Deshaun was actually, like, if the jury agreed with Deshaun, which it was so hard to read the jury's reactions because there are so many of them, and they're so, you know, they're very, you know, they make big reactions, like Tiffany and Shan, they make the faces. And so I was, you know, trying to look as hard as I could, but, you know, Heather's talking, Erica's talking, Deshaun's talking. I can't tell who they're smiling at, who they're, like, you know, making, like, huh, faces at, and who they're rolling their eyes at. I thought that they were rooting for Deshaun at that point because the whole, you know, a lot of discussions we had talked about were all, you know, oh, like, this alliance means so much, and to have someone win that would represent us in terms of that alliance, I thought that they would be on Deshaun's side and that they would understand that he just did what was his best for his game. So I figured he was a trustworthy opinion to follow in terms of what the jury might think. Mm-hmm. So when he said I was the bigger threat and that, you know, Erica wasn't respected, which wasn't what I agreed with, but it was something that I had to consider, that the jury didn't respect Erica's game. If the jury doesn't respect Erica's game and I step into fire with Erica, well, then it's gratuitous and they say, why'd you do that? We're going to give Deshaun the win, and, you know, you made a stupid mistake. So I did a move where there really wasn't much opportunity to say I made a stupid mistake. It was the best option considering I didn't know whether Deshaun was the contender to win or Erica was the contender to win, but at the same time satisfied my idea that Erica was a bigger contender to win strategically.
And Alexa, we had talked about that a little bit on the predictions episode for the finale, where we had said that Xander going out and just beating up on somebody who in the fire making challenge, who the jury isn't perceiving as a threat, is bad for his game because of just, like, being the younger guy. It's like, oh, now you're going to come beat up Heather. Like, good for you. Like, what is that? So it is a tricky situation. Looking back now, though, do you think that had you gone, pulled yourself out and beaten Erica in fire, do you think that that actually would have gained you some favor with the jury, or not really?
I don't think so. I think the jury had been out on me for a long time. I think that each individual member of the jury needed their own speech and their own reasons why they should vote for me. And that, you know, if no matter what I do, they're going to find a fault in what I did. I think that it's just really, it was just impossible to please everyone. And, you know, everyone was, When you're voted out and you don't expect it, that blind side, that like fresh sting, I feel like people look for some kind of reason to just latch on to why it must have happened. And I think a lot of people latched on to what they talked about in the reunion show, is that unawareness. They talked about, you know, my youth and me not being socially aware, which is so interesting because, you know, watching the show back, you can see that I was very calculated, very thorough, very thinking about everything that was going on and understanding people and how they worked. It's just there were some sensitive subjects that, you know, it's definitely like it was tricky. So I didn't want to, yeah, it's just interesting that like people latched on to that. And I think that it was an easy way for them to say, oh, well, he's just socially unaware. Like, it's not that he voted me out and that I was, you know, tricked by someone half my age. Like, who would want to admit that?
Yeah.
I think that being young and playing the game I did, it was the game to get me as far as I could, but not the game to win. And I just don't think there was a game to win for me, at least that I can think of. I don't regret anything.
And I think to your point about the live reunion, there's pros and cons. And I say that as a viewer, not as somebody who lost and then immediately had to atone for their sins right after. But normally in the reunion show, the cast has time to like deal with how they played the game and how it worked out, and then watch the show. And then, you know, 4 to 6 months later, they can come out and say, okay, like, I've thought about it. I get it. I've talked to Xander. This happened 30 seconds after the vote happened. So there was no, of no one's fault. There was just no time for anybody to like really sit down and think about it and know that you're being genuine or just clarify things. So I think as cool as it was to see like the winner, like drink champagne, like on site, it also was like, you still didn't get the full storyline.
Well, and to add to that, I do think that one of the main reasons why I hope that Survivor will go back to the reunions when the world is kind of more back to normal is because I do think that there's something to be said for it really being that reunion of, oh, Xander and Liana, what are you doing now? And then we get to hear that, even though it's like 3 seconds of Jeff saying it, it just feels kind of authentic. And I had said on the one podcast, they should just make what happened there, since they said that that's something they do pretty much every time, even though people wouldn't know who won. That should just be something that goes on Paramount Plus, and we get to watch that anyway. Like, that's a fun, as much as miserable as you and Deshaun were, that actually was a lot of fun for us. So I think that they should keep doing that, but just not be how they reveal the winner. And maybe you and Deshaun wouldn't be so sad.
I think that that's like a perfect way to talk about it, because like, the thing that was the hardest about going right into the reunion show is, you know, this is your last piece. This is the last thing you get to say, and you don't know the full picture. You're still, you know, coming off of fighting for 3 hours for $1 million and just pitching your heart out. I was exhausted. I was tired. I was hungry. And I was just, I mean, you can see my eyes are so red. I was beaten up, and I just kind of wanted to go to Ponderosa and munch. But yeah, it's really hard to bring your whole story to a narrative close when you don't even have your wits about you. I really would have liked to have, you know, been able to articulate everything I thought and felt when I kind of felt like I just wanted to get it over with. And, you know, thankfully, I felt like it handled it pretty well. But yeah, I would say that the perfect combination is probably talking about the show after it's done, but then also getting the closure of being able to recap once you can articulate it. And when you are, you know, your stomach's full and you're not like, you don't want to claw around for food. And yeah, you're not just like tired out of your mind.
How was the pizza?
I didn't have the pizza. So something Tiffany mentioned. It's not that the pizza's bad. Something that Tiffany mentioned in one of her exit interviews is that I'm paleo. And I used that as a good way. I use that as a good way to cushion the threat level of giving up my reward, because everyone's going to be like, oh, that's strategic if I give up my reward, which, you know, half strategic, half I do really feel for Erica, because drawing 2 gray rocks sucks. Like, I wouldn't want to be in that position. Well, I would, but I know other people wouldn't want to be in that position. So yeah, like I told everyone, like, oh, I'm paleo, I'm not gonna eat it. But I did eat I ate 2 entire pizzas at the pizza reward. So I was definitely willing to break when people weren't looking, and it wasn't, strategic for me to just say, "Oh no, don't worry about it. I'm not trying to curry favor. I'm just, paleo." And so when the game was over, I kind of wanted to go back to all the things that I love about myself and that, make me proud of myself. I love self-discipline. As I talked, in the show, I wasn't like proud of how I looked or how athletic I was when I was younger. And so, the discipline of paleo and like being on a diet, it makes me feel good. It makes me happy. And so after the show was over, it's like, well, I'm so close to Ponderosa. I may as well just wait like an hour and get fish and rice and fruit and all the things I love and that make me happy, the Xander candy. So, yeah, I was just like, I'll hold off. I don't need the pizza. I can, especially because I have this very interesting relationship with discipline where I feel like discipline gets me to where I need to go in life. If I just work my hardest and do everything with passion and heart, and I don't get caught up in like immediate gratification, I delay the gratification. That's when I feel like I get rewarded. So for me, obviously, I'm like, well, shit, I just lost. I've got a lot to work. Like, of course, mentally it has a huge toll. I'm like, oh, I've got a lot to work on. Like, what did I do wrong? Like, do these people hate me? Do they not like me? Am I like, so I knew that the thing that would calm me down, or at least like give me some solace, is remembering, hey, the only person you ever went out there to make proud was you. And what makes you proud is, how disciplined you are, how strong you are, how much you fight. So just hold off and eat what you love when you get back to Ponderosa.
I love it. I always say that if there was a shower reward, I wouldn't shower because, at that point, like, come on, man. Like, when are you ever not going to shower for 30 days or whatever it is? Like, screw that. I want to, like, if I'm going to make it till the last day, I want to know what does Phil smell like 26 days, 39 days later, whatever kind of season I make it on.
You guys are crazy. I'm taking a shower.
Well, I'm sitting here laughing as he's saying this. As he's saying this, I'm like, is your right arm numb yet? Because I'm pretty sure you've been holding your phone in the right arm the entire time. And little do we know, his whole arm's like pale white right now because there's
His
no blood
friend is
flow.
holding
But
up the phone, actually.
it's not instant gratification.
No,
We'll deal
I
with the
love
arm
this kind
later.
of stuff. Exactly. That's always my mentality, is like, oh, I'll feel the pain later. And Heather, it was really funny. We had a cute relationship. She would always bring up, you smell so bad, like you're so hungry, you're so dirty. And like, yeah, I'm like, Heather, like, I'll fix all these things when I'm a millionaire. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
I'll eat when I'm a millionaire. I'll clean myself when I'm a millionaire. But for right now, I don't exist. I'm just here to, forgo all those pleasures and focus, get those blinders on, and get to the end.
Okay, speaking of the dirty thing, I don't mean this in a bad way, but there was literally always dirt on your face. Like, were you just like rolling around loving it, or what was the deal? I feel like there's one person every season who's covered in dirt all the time.
Yeah, so I cleaned myself a decent bit, but I actually got sunburn in the original days at Yasa, and I started peeling, and the dirt got into the peel. So the two marks on my face were always there because it was literally underneath the new layer of skin that had
That's
formed. So I
awful.
just, that's awful. And not only that, but like I had a bunch of other scabs that were covered in dirt too, because during the boulder challenge, I just had all the my yellow tribe mates step on me as the human ladder. And like that scab on my shoulder, the cuts and bruises everywhere, that was all from people's shoes just dragging on me. Because yeah, I was just like, you know what? Because we talked about it for a little, and I was like, no dawdling, let's just get it done. Just step on me. And Heather's like, no, I don't. I'm like, Heather, step on me. And she's got these like sharp chacos on, and she just takes off a piece of skin that. Yeah, so that I was just dirty from then on out, and I was also pretty beat up after that one. So it was kind of like, you know what? I'm just gonna hunker down, acknowledge that, like, yeah, I'm hopefully, not that I'm not looking that presentable for TV, but you know what? It doesn't matter.
It's the point of the whole show.
like I said, no showers. You don't need to be clean. Just be disgust. That's your one chance in life where it's all okay. So just get kicked in the face with Chacos and move on. That's it.
Exactly. But, exactly. So many people, you know, they ask me like, oh, like I would do it, but I'm afraid of bugs. It's like, you look at that bug and just picture it's a bag of $1 million. Like you can, you can forego pretty much anything. Just turn it off.
Yeah. It's mental, man. It's all mental. Well, we've been here for an hour and a half, so we should wrap this thing up. Is there anything that you that we didn't talk about that you want to throw in here at the end to make sure people know about?
Yeah, just that I would say that I'm really glad that things turned out the way. Like, I honestly don't have any reservations or any qualms about the way things went. And honestly, like, I think that Eric is a phenomenal winner. She's such an amazing person, and we got really close, especially towards the latter half when all we're doing is spending time with each other and having fun. And you know, I really, as much as like I would have loved to have won, I can acknowledge that it just wasn't my season. The game to get me far in the game wasn't the game that the jury was going to respect or love, especially not given that I was 20 years old at the time. Like, I could certainly see that, like, why would anyone want to give $1 million to a 20-year-old when they think I'm probably going to spend it on a Ferrari rather than, like, you know, funding my own company. So I'm sure that that was, but anyway, just want to say that Eric is an amazing winner, phenomenal winner. I can't stand to see that people don't think she deserved it when she's so incredible. It's possible. I think the big part about it is, like, with social media these days, it's like there can't be multiple truths. People are so set on saying I'm right, and you also have to acknowledge that I'm right and think the way that I do, when there can be two truths. It can be, you know, both ways at the same time. Like, it can be that, like, oh man, maybe I deserve to win, but Erica's a great winner at the same time. It doesn't have to be that those are mutually exclusive. Like, I don't think those cancel out. So just, you know, as much as people will argue like, oh, you know, I was on the wrong side of the votes all the time. Well, I was in the minority alliance, so how could I have been on the right side of the votes without voting out my allies, which would have cost me jury votes? And then you'd complain about that. So it's true I'm not on the right side of the votes, but it's also true that, you know, I was the underdog and that I was on the bottom and that I had to work my way into the majority. And that meant not voting correctly a couple times. And it's like, you know, Erica also, she voted correctly the whole time, which is just amazing. Yeah. But at the same time, she was in the majority. So it's like, there are two sides to every coin. And basically the gist of what I'm saying is that it's all, like, fine in the end. I don't know why people get so caught up in, you know, arguing their piece when really it was a great season. I enjoyed it a lot. I hope everybody else did. Erica's phenomenal. She deserves only respect and only love. I hope. Hopefully I can go back out there and make some people proud.
That's really well said. And you know, you're now in the crosshairs of social media because you're the latest and greatest Survivor contestants. That's what the 18 of you are all going through now. And, you know, it's cool that, like, you know, you have that perspective on it, and hopefully the rest of the cast does too, because a lot of the time it's just like, hey, this person sucks because we say they suck and there's no way you can change it. And this person's great because we say they're great and there's no way you can change it. And it's just unfortunate, but that's social media. It's polarizing and it is what it is. But yeah, no, it's tough. But I think when people rewatch this season, which people will end up doing, I think they're going to see a lot more of Erica than they realize early on. And I think that's going to change people's perspective on how it all went down. But Xander, I appreciate you saying all that. And it was great having you on here, and it was fun talking to you for an hour and a half and breaking it all down and learning about your scabs and what you did right and all that fun stuff. And Alexa, you got anything else you want to say here? What you got to take us home.
Yeah, not too much. You guys know where to find us on social media. Give us a follow. For those who are interested in becoming patrons, McKenna and Celestina, her two other patrons, they are going to be running an amazing race podcast. So if you aren't sure, now is definitely the time. We are finalizing a few more of these season 41 tell-alls. So definitely keep an eye out on our Twitter and Instagram for once we get those set up. And Xander, this was awesome. I hope you find a blanket or something warm, because I know you've been cold in Florida for so long. So good luck to you on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We will see you all next time.
Bye.